Well, let's turn to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 3, and we're going to plunge into verses 3 and 4, some of my favorite verses in Proverbs. We're going to be talking today, tonight, about true love. And we're going to see that true love does the loving thing because it's the right thing, even though it may be the hard thing. It does the loving thing because it's the right thing, even though it may be the hard thing, both in what we do and in what we say. And perhaps today you'll see something that you need to do for your love to be true with someone that you love, with a spouse or a son or a daughter or a friend. Or maybe you'll be encouraged tonight that your love has been true and you'll see that it's worth it. We're going to see tonight that, like the song goes, what the world needs now, and this probably dates me, is love, real love, both in our marriages and in our families. Love, real love, loving words and loving deeds that are all grounded in truth. Love is not just what someone called a shiver in your liver. That's what I tell couples who I'm doing premarital counseling with. It's a little bit more than that. When you're standing starry-eyed at the altar. A bunch of kids were interviewed once, I was just reading this, about what real love is, and what one 8-year-old said, when you love somebody, your eyelashes go up and down and little stars come out of you. Or love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and smell each other. No, it's more like this one. Love, and this captures what we're going to talk about tonight. Love is what my grandpa does. When my grandma got arthritis, she couldn't bend over and paint her toenails anymore. So my grandfather does it for her all the time, even when his hands got arthritis too. That's true love. Yes, that's right, child. True love does the loving thing because it's the right thing, even though it may be the hard thing. We saw last time that there's such, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, there's such well-being in wise living. And we saw how it literally impacts our health, just like Solomon talks about in Proverbs 3, 1 and 2. This time we're going to see that at the heart of wise living is just what that grandfather did. Now, not every husband should paint his wife's toenails. He did it for her because that was huge for her. And every husband needs to know what's huge for his wife, even though it's hard. There's such well-being in wise living. The heart of wise living is just what that grandfather did, that kind of thing. And indeed, it can bring such well-being. That's what Solomon says. Just like Solomon says in chapter 3, verse 1, let's start in verse 1. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace, that is, remember, shalom, they will add to you. So he starts this chapter by saying, let your heart keep my commandments. They'll do something for you. And then he moves on to what really are the indispensables of wise living. Four of the most important commandments that we should keep that bring well-being through wise living. The first of which we'll look at tonight. Starting in verse 3, this is the first commandment. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And what kind of well-being will this wise living bring into your life? Next verse, verse 4. So you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. According to Solomon, the first indispensable of wisely living is simply to be truly loving. To speak and to show true love to the point that it's a habit, a pattern that, as he says, is engraved in your very heart. It's that important. The second great commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, why is it so important? Of all that Solomon could have focused on when it comes to being wise, to wise living, why would he start out by telling us to be kind and true? That's what he's saying. What does that have to do with wisdom? Well, a lot of it has to do with what James said in James 3, in the passage that Tom read. If you'll turn there real quick. James chapter 3, remember when he asked, who among you is wise and understanding? The idea being, who among you thinks that you've got it all up here, that you're as wise as a Solomon? James 3:13, let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. There are a lot of wise guys out there who aren't wise men. He's talking to wise guys. Who thinks you're wise? But they're more like bulls in a china closet, like loose cannons. There are people who speak the truth as though they've got a corner on wisdom, but without love. That's what James is talking about, which can so easily become, you know, a license to kill. And they often don't even know that what they're doing is the pit of hell, to the point of verbal abuse, which can be as destructive as physical abuse in a marriage. And some husbands just don't get this. Who among you, James says, is wise and understanding? Who among you thinks you've got the truth for someone else that needs to be told? Well, before you say anything, he's saying, remember that if you're truly understanding, truly wise in what you say, you'll be truly loving. That is, James goes on to say, for the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, then gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. That is, you'll practice what you preach. That is, real wisdom is not just truthful, but kind, or it's from the pit of hell. That's the idea. The wise and understanding man knows that people close their eyes to advice but open their eyes to example. So they're without hypocrisy. They practice what they preach, especially in the way they say it. People don't care, the old saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. When love is seen, someone said, the message is heard. Unlike the man who wrote this scathing letter to C.S. Lewis, who responded to that letter, to this scathing letter, in a way that I think perfectly illustrates and tees up what we'll talk about today, the marriage of kindness and truth. Lewis' response in longhand shows a master evangelist at work. He said, yes, I'm not surprised that a man who agreed with me with Screwtape letters, this guy said I agreed with Screwtape letters, might disagree with me when I wrote about religion. We can hardly discuss the whole matter by post, can we? I'll only make one shot. When people object, as you do, that if Jesus was God as well as man, then he had an unfair advantage which deprives him for them of all value, it seems to me as if a man struggling in the water should refuse a rope thrown to him by another who had one foot on the bank, saying, oh, but you have an unfair advantage. It can be because of that advantage that he can be of help. But all good wishes, we must just differ in charity, I hope. You must not be angry at me for believing, you know. I'm not angry at you. That's kindness and truth at work. That's what Solomon's talking about. That's what James is talking about. Truth without love is just hot air so often. And it can really burn, but it doesn't give a lot of sight. So many people turn up the heat on their loved ones in the name of speaking the truth, but it only makes the house darker, filling it, as James says, with all disorder and every evil thing. Wisdom is a way of living just as much as it is a way of thinking. It's a way of loving, where truth and love meet for the good of our fellow man. Like James says, with truth that is pure, then peaceable, then gentle, full of mercy, truth in love. Wisdom is a manner of speaking, how you say it, as much as what you say. And James really helps us to understand what Solomon is saying. That's why it says in the next verse, James 3:14, that the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. That is, it's not sown in anger. That is, when you speak a word of wisdom to someone, it needs to be planted in love. It needs to be sown in peace as much as you can. You need to be peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy, or the fruit of that seed will not be greater righteousness in that person. greater wisdom and understanding and growth on their part, but rather, as James says, disorder and every evil thing. So that fleshes out Solomon's teaching here from a New Testament perspective. That's why Solomon 2 begins by saying, the first thing you need to keep in mind when it comes to wisdom is, do not let kindness and truth leave you. Don't abandon either of those. Keep them together. Bind them around your neck. Keep them together. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Now, this is another one of those tip of the iceberg verses that comes out of who God is, as we've been seeing in Revelation, out of the heart of who He is toward us. And so it must be pretty important that we are that way towards others. You see it, for instance, and let's flesh it out from the Old Testament perspective, looking at God. Exodus 34:6, for instance, you don't have to turn to all these, but it's his famous self-revelation where he said, the Lord, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and then here it is, here's how he sums up the essence of who God is toward us, slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness and truth. They're engraved on his heart too. Those are the same two words that Solomon uses in Proverbs 3. What's to be true of us is most true of God. You'll find this throughout the Old Testament. Whenever they tell you what they most like about God, more often than not, you'll hear about these two attributes of God married together in one and the same breath. Psalm 85:9. Surely his salvation is near to those who fear him. Loving kindness and truth have met together in him. Psalm 89:14. Loving kindness and truth go before you. O Lord, kindness and truth have met together in you. Psalm 57:15. He will send from heaven and save me. God will send forth his loving kindness and truth. I will sing praises to thee among the nations, for your loving kindness is great to the heavens and your truth to the clouds. This is pretty important. Psalm 138:2, I will give you thanks with all my heart. I will bow down toward your holy temple and give thanks to your name for your loving kindness and truth. Then the Lord passed by Moses and proclaimed, again, the Lord, compassionate and gracious. From the very beginning, he focuses on this. Slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness and truth. Mixing kindness and truth is nothing less than godlike. It's the essence of who God is. And it was consummated when Christ came, when, as John says, grace and truth, it's the same idea, John 1, grace and truth were realized in him. This is huge in the Scripture. Now, the heart of being truthful in the Hebrew, going back to Solomon here in the Old Testament, the heart of being truthful in the Hebrew sense of the term goes even deeper than what you say. It goes into what we do. Because in the Hebrew, to be truthful is to be faithful. In the sense of holding to the truth with someone and of being true with someone. It's what we say, holding to the truth, and it's what we do. It's being true with someone, as in being true blue. That's the idea here. Just like God is. The most frequent phrase of praise in the Scripture is that his loving kindness is everlasting. We've seen that. But the second most frequent phrase of praise in Scripture is that his faithfulness, a word that's also derived from the Hebrew word for truth, his faithfulness is unto all generations. God says it's the bottom line of his relationship with us. Kindness and truth, as in faithfulness. And those, Solomon says, that are truly wise and understanding, make it the bottom line of their relationship with their fellow man. It's the wise thing to do. The first commandment of wisdom, in a way. Proverbs 3:3. We use the word almost in the same way, that is truth, when we say you're a true friend, right? Or when you were at the altar and you said you'd be faithful and true. This is the action side of being true. in sickness and in health, till death do us part. Binding kindness and truth around your neck means not just to speak the truth in love, but to be tried and true in your love. As we take this a little deeper. A true friend, no matter what happens to them, no matter what they do to you. What does it look like in practice? Well, so important is this to our well-being and wise living that God illustrates it for us several times in the Old Testament. And just so we don't miss the point, he then goes on to caption the story to actually say it. That is, this is what it means to be kindness and true, kind and true, by actually using the very words in the midst of the story. You'll find a good example of it in 1 Samuel 31, if you'll turn there. 1 Samuel 31 is just after Saul died. Saul had long since lost the loyalty and the love of his people. And yet when he died, some of his people still did the loving thing because it was the right thing, even though it was the hard thing. It's in 1 Samuel 31, starting in verse 11. They put his weapons in the temple of Ashtaroth and fastened his body to the wall of Beth Shem, which was a great disgrace for the Hebrews, for that to be done to a body. Now, when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men rose and walked all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan, and they came to Jabesh and buried them there. And they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. A few days later, word got back to David. If you'll turn to 2 Samuel 2, verse 4. Verse 4. Well, actually, that's not... Oh, 2, verse 4. I was looking at 1. 2. And David brought up his men who were with him, each with his household, and they lived in the cities of Hebron. And the men of Judah came there and anointed David over the house of Judah. And it was they told David, saying, "It was the men of Jabesh-Gilead who buried Saul." And David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, "May you be blessed of the Lord because you have shown this kindness to Saul your Lord and have buried him. Now may the Lord show you," here it is, "loving kindness and truth." This is the picture of it, what they did. "And I will show this goodness to you because you have done this." That is, may the Lord show loving kindness and truth to you just as you showed it to Saul. You went at the risk of your lives to take the body down and to bury it, and then you fasted 7 days, this man that all Israel hates. You did the loving thing because it was the right thing, even though it was the hard thing. You find it again in 2 Samuel 15. We just have time for one more, which Tom read. David was fleeing for his life, and the people had switched loyalties to Absalom. To stay with David at that point was neither popular nor was it very safe at that time. Yet some state wanted to stay with David. Some foreigners did. 2 Samuel 15, 19, the Gittites in particular. It said, "Then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, 'Why do you also go with us? You're risking your life. This is not a popular thing to do. I'm being exiled because of my son. Return and remain, for you are a foreigner. What stake do you have in any of this? You're not an Israelite. Return to your own place. Shall I make you wander with us?' David said, 'Return and take back your brothers.' But in verse 21, Ittai answered the king and said, 'As the Lord lives, as my lord the king lives, surely wherever my lord the king may be, whether for death or for life, there also your servant will be.'" And then in verse 22, David summed it up, said to Ittai the Gittite, "Kindness and truth be to you. May God do to you what you just did to me." That is, may kindness and truth be with you as you have shown it to me. You've been faithful and true. This is what will rescue you from the tyranny of your emotions, because it's easy to fall in love, but it's hard to stay in love. And one of the ways we do that is to choose to be true even though we may not feel very kind. Kindness and truth. kindness needs truth, like concrete, and some of you men might relate to this, needs steel bars. Kindness needs faithfulness, like concrete needs rebar. When the going gets tough, because there can be a collapse without it. It's like the buildings collapsed in the Mexican earthquake a few years ago. I don't know if you saw pictures of that. But their high-rises didn't just fall over as they usually do in earthquakes. They shrunk. They collapsed like an accordion until the floors were just pancaked on top of each other because the contractors didn't use rebar in the columns. And it became quite a scandal. Every relationship will be shaken. So what are you building into the columns of your relationships by, you know, way of structural reinforcement, relational rebar, binding kindness and truth around your neck? You bind kindness and truth around your neck by loving them in sickness and health, for richer, for poorer, till death does us part. You bind kindness and truth around your neck by working hard on relationships if you're a single, and sticking with your friends when the going gets tough in sickness and in health. You bind kindness and truth around your neck when you do the hard thing as a parent because it's the right thing. You may think, you know, I tell this to young people. You may think your mother may be your enemy. How could your mother be your truest friend, giving the kind of things that she's saying to me? I'll never forget reading this from Irma Bombeck, "Mother's Love Till It Hurts." Remember Irma Bombeck in the papers? Irma Bombeck is on vacation. This is one of her most popular columns of the past. "You don't love me." How many of you have had your kids lay that one on you? How many times have you, as a parent, resisted the urge to tell them how much? "Someday when my children are old enough to understand the logic that motivates a mother, I'll tell them, 'I loved you enough to insist you buy a bike with your own money that we could afford and that you couldn't. I loved you enough to be silent and let you discover your hand-picked friend was a creep. I loved you enough to stand over you for 2 hours while you cleaned your bedroom, a job that would have taken me 15 minutes. I loved you enough to say, 'Yes, you can go to Disney World on Mother's Day.' I loved you enough to admit I was wrong and ask your forgiveness. I loved you enough to let you assume responsibility for your own actions at 6, 10, or 16. I loved you enough to show you, to shove you off my lap, to let go of your hand, to be mute to your pleas and insensitive to your demands so that you had to stand alone. I loved you enough to accept you for what you are, not for what I wanted you to be. But most of all, I loved you enough to say no when you hated me for it. That was the hardest part of all." You bind kindness and truth around your neck when you discipline your child, right, rather than just letting it slide because you're so tired. Maybe your kids who are grown and have kids need to hear that. Or when you stand up for the underdog at school, even though that is something, you know, they're making fun of your grandkid. When you take care of an aging parent, even though they don't know who you are any longer. When you say you're sorry, though they may have started it, and everything in you says you're 99.99% the problem. You bind kindness and truth around your neck when you find ways to love people who may not love you or may make fun of your faith, showing by your good behavior, your deeds, in the gentleness of wisdom, being peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy. And when love is seen, the message will most likely be heard. Children know what true love is. Someone emailed this to me the other day. A group of 4 to 8-year-olds were asked, "What does love mean?" "Love is when someone hurts you and you get so mad But you don't just yell at them because you know it would hurt their feelings. Love is what makes Daddy decide to smile at us even when he's tired. Love is when Daddy's late for work, but still he makes coffee for Mommy, and he takes a sip before giving it to her to make sure it tastes okay. By the way, another question they ask is, how would the world be different if people didn't get married? To which Kevin, age 8, said, there would sure be a lot of kids to explain, wouldn't there be? That has nothing to do with our subject, but I couldn't resist. Back to their question, what is true love? It's when Mommy gives Daddy the best piece of chicken. Kindness and truth. You know, as we flesh this out, and so often it's illustrated powerfully. You know, wisdom calls out in the streets. We saw in chapter 1, it's shouting at us everywhere. It's in the scripture, but God, through his natural revelation, communicates it and reinforces the scripture in many other ways. Probably my favorite example of this kindness and truth thing outside of scripture, of doing the loving thing because it's the right thing, even though it's the hard thing, is in Fiddler on the Roof. I've done about 65 weddings in my time, and in many of them I have shared this because it's the heart of survival and marriage. Tevye and Goldie have been married for 25 years. And on their 25th anniversary, they get to talking. Tevye, Goldie, I'm asking you a question. Do you love me? Goldie, you fool. Tevye, I know, but do you love me? Goldie, do I love you? For 25 years, I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked the cow. After 25 years, why talk about love right now? Tevye, Goldie, the first time I met you was my wedding day. I was scared. Goldie, so was I. Tevye, I was nervous. Goldie, so was I. Tevye, but my father and my mother said we'd learn to love each other, and so I'm asking, Goldie, do you love me? Goldie, I'm your wife. Tevye, I know, but do you love me? And then they'd turn to the audience. She'd turn to the audience and say, do I love him? For 25 years, I've lived with him, fought with him, starved with him. 25 years, my bed was his. If that's not love, what is? Relational rebar. Tevye, then you love me. Goldie, I suppose I do. Tevye, and I suppose I love you too. And then they'd look at each other and they'd say together, doesn't change a thing, but after 25 years, it's nice to know. It's nice to know. If that's not love, what is? Doing the loving thing because it's the right thing, even though it may be the hard thing. Call it relational rebar. Such wise living is a prescription for well-being. As Solomon said, so you will find favor and good success in the eyes of God and men, and in your marriage and everywhere else. It's a key to successful relationships and to so much more. Binding kindness and truth around your neck. By speaking the truth in love, as we've seen, and by being true blue in love. Which only goes to show that love is not a shiver in your liver. And we have all learned that by now, haven't we? You may have seen the bumper sticker about love at first sight. I love this one that said, do you believe in love at first sight, or should I drive by again? True love is more like the one who said, love at first sight is no miracle. It's when two people have been looking at each other for 20 years, or in some cases, 30, 40, 50 years, that it becomes a miracle. We've got a lot of miracles in this church. It's a miracle that comes through love that's true, as He is true. In both word and deed. Oh, do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck till they're inseparable. Write them on the tablet of your heart till it's indelible. So you will find favor and good success in the eyes of God and man. There's such well-being in wise living.